Hello, Paul. This is Tom Garcia in Tucson. I received your letter and the pictures today. I'm going to start a tape this evening, get it finished. Probably take me about a week to get it finished. Let's see, today is the 4th of January, and then I'll get it off to you. There's not going to be a whole lot of conversation on the tape. I've got 5 or 10 minutes here at the very most, and then I'm going to put something on it. I'll see what I can find on my Vietnam tapes, something that I recorded either in Vietnam or one of my friends perhaps recorded. And that will be the next part, the remainder or the backside or whatever, I'll decide when I get there, of this tape. I'm glad you mentioned about the Writers' Conference here in Tucson, because I'd forgotten about it, and it is this month. I think I'll just stop right now and look for the date. January 26th. Okay, I'll be able to go to that. I'm going down to Texas, San Antonio, Lackland Air Force Base next week. But I'll be back in time to go to this thing on the 26th. Yeah, I'll see if Ted Schwarz is there, and if I can find out about agents, or get a list of agents, or find out where to get a list, or whatever. Yeah, that Writer's Digest, I take that from time to time. My subscription expires, and then I take it up again. The part of Writer's Digest that I like the best is the part where they tell markets. That's the title of it. And speaking of markets, gee, I threw away last month's Writer's Digest, or I would send it on to you. I have something here, and I'm looking for it. Here it is, called Markets. It's just a little spiral book, and when I find something that looks good, I cut it out and paste it in. And let's see if I did that here. Ah, there it is. Good. 3 score and 10. I got a sample copy of 3 score and 10 today, and it's a brand new magazine. The things that are in it are, some of them look like they could have been letters to the editor. And some of the articles look like they could have been stolen out of some small newspaper somewhere, feature stories. There was an article in there. I read the whole magazine in 10 minutes today. It was only 16 pages. There was an article in there that mentioned about a woman who lived in Woodland Hills, and it didn't even say where Woodland Hills was. It's in California, but a lot of people might not know that. This is for readers over 70 years of age. I'm going to, when I write them a letter, I'm going to suggest they change their masthead to be about people over 70 years of age. Why eliminate younger readers if you can glom onto a few of them who might, for some purpose or other, want to buy the magazine? Well, anyhow, here it says from the article, the new monthly will be buying 36 to 72 manuscripts, ranging from 250 to 2,000 words annually. Payment is $25 to $100 on publication for one-time rights. Okay, that caused me to write them a letter and ask for a free copy and give them a story idea. And they ripped the top of my letter off and scotch-taped it inside the sample copy. So I'll enclose that. I don't need it anymore. I'll enclose that with this tape just so you'll see that there are people out there who are interested in article submissions. Let's see if it gives the address of the place in case you want to write for a free copy. It says here it's Rural Delivery Route 2, Box 103, Boswell, Pennsylvania, 15531. I've got an article called An American Hero, The Story of Ensign Jesse L. Brown. It's about the Korean War, and I may have mentioned it to you. I submitted the idea to a magazine that I read about in Writer's Digest that was supposed to have started the publication in December or January, last month or this month, called Black Americans in the Military. And after an excessive delay, I got a letter from them saying, yes, we'd like to have the article, and we'd like to use it in our premier edition, and please send it post-haste and all that. So I sent the article, and then I never heard anything. A couple of months elapsed. The other day, I got their correspondence and got their telephone number off the letter and called them, and the phone's been disconnected. So there I am, up the creek on that deal. And it's awfully hard to find anybody who's interested in publishing any kind of an article about the Korean War, even a pretty good article, as I think this one is. I have an article about the E-63 urine sniffer that I used in Vietnam. Gung Ho wanted the article. They wanted the pictures that went with it. I sent them the article when I didn't yet have the pictures in hand. That was a mistake. The people in Washington who are supposed to supply official Army photographs are really behind the power curve. They've apparently got a file on me, and all the letters that I've written them are in that one file. Because when I sent $12 and gave the photo numbers and everything and never got the pictures, and then I wrote them another letter and said, let's start all over. And then they called me on the telephone and said, oh, yes, we have your file here. Don't worry, we'll take care of it. The other day I got the photos. Not the photos of the E-63 Manpack detector, but a couple of really crummy photos taken out of a helicopter at way up at high altitude with a wide-angle lens, it looked like, of Utapao Air Base in Thailand. Actually, one of Utapao and one of Anderson Air Force Base at Guam. I had written a letter inquiring as to whether B-52 flight line photos were available. They had never answered. They had never offered to sell me any photos. And now they've gotten that request mixed up with the urine sniffer request, and those were the photos that I got in the mail, which I promptly sent back. So, gee, that is really bad. Oh, here's another nice photographic experience. I did find an official Navy photo number. The battleship Arizona, taken on the 12th of December, 1941, in a sunken condition, of course. I wanted that photograph. And the Department of the Navy sells photographs for $3 each or something like that. I sent them $3. Well, actually, I sent them $9 or $8 or whatever it was, enough for three photos. I gave that number, and I went on a fishing expedition. I gave the number just before the battleship Arizona number and the number just after. And I thought, maybe I'll get two other views of the battleship Arizona. The pictures came. Oh, after a telephone call from the Department of the Navy, apologizing that they'd messed up one of the three pictures, and they were going to do it over again, and they were sorry for the delay, and they would get them to me. Gee, that was nice of them. Well, they ended up sending me two identical photos of the battleship Arizona. They threw in the extra one, I guess, just to be nice, account of the delay. And then the number right before that picture was, and it was described on the back, a little stick-on thing, the battleship California, also in a sunken condition. And from the looks of activity going on board and the smoke in the sky and all, it appears that the picture was taken late in the day on December 7th. I happen to know someone who was a crew member on California, and he abandoned ship three times that day. It's quite a story. The order came to abandon ship. The order came to go back to the ship. The order came again for everyone to abandon ship. And late in the day, he and he alone went back a third time and was told to man the radio transmitter and await further orders. And the only orders he got were at sunset, once again, abandon ship. So he may hold the world's record for how many times you can abandon ship in one day. Anyway, that was the next picture, and I'm glad to have that. No great thing. But the third picture, oh boy, is that ever a nice picture. I've never seen it published anywhere. I don't know if it has been or not, but it's a great picture. It shows Admiral Mark Michener standing next to Lieutenant Colonel Jimmy Doolittle, and behind them is the Tokyo Raider group, the pilots of the B-25s. You can see one B-25 in the background. You can see that they are on the aircraft carrier Hornet en route to bomb Tokyo. A terrific picture. I made some copies of it in the backyard yesterday, just laying the 8x10 picture down on the cool deck of my swimming pool and standing above it with a 35mm single lens reflex camera. And if the copies come out, I have no reason to think they won't. I'll send you a copy. I'm sure you'd like to see that anyway. The pictures you sent me, say, that's pretty snazzy. I'm standing here looking at them. Pretty snazzy radio-controlled model there. Wow. I'm impressed. I wonder how many times you can fly an airplane like that before it crashes. That's what I would worry about. Oh, there's another one. Gee, those are nice. That must be a lot of fun. We have a field somewhere around here. A model airplane flying field, although I've never been involved in the model airplane flying. These pictures that you took, I presume you took, of the new statuary at the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, very, very nice pictures. The pictures that I've seen before were taken at in black and white in a newspaper or something, and certainly don't do it justice like these pictures that you've sent me here. Yep, pretty darn good. And the little helicopter. Oh, now I get it. That's a model. I'll be darned. I thought that was a real helicopter. I think it's a model helicopter. Gee, that sounds very complicated and so forth. And here's another picture, a long shot of the statuary. Pretty good, pretty good. I've not seen the statue. I was at the wall on Veterans Day in 1983. That must have been about the 26th of May. And the 25th of May, my son graduated from the Naval Academy, and we were in Washington for a week for all of those festivities back in 1983. The wall had just been dedicated shortly before then, I think. Well, this novel, the Long Range Reconnaissance Patrol Unit 1, that sounds like... if you follow them through from the beginning through training and on through Vietnam and then back to the real world, that is a heck of a comprehensive, long kind of a novel. I hope that you can do something with that. That sounds real interesting and quite commercial. You worked with some real elite ties. I was around lots of different kinds of ties, and some of them were not too sharp. And the 23rd Helicopter Squadron in particular, that I had a little bit of something. I was assigned TDY to them, and I still don't know why. They didn't know why I was there. I didn't know why I was there. We went and flew around for a few days, and then I went back home. I still don't know what was going on. But they did have some problems. They weren't very eager to get out and fight the war, anybody's war. They wanted to go back to Bangkok. Didn't want to be up there where they were, and they sort of snuck off on me in the middle of the night and disappeared because a fella had a rotor tack out. You know, the engine tack and the rotor tack are normally right next to each other on the same, the needles right together on the same gauge. And if you don't have a rotor tack, so what? engine tach still tells you what you're doing, and only in the event of auto rotation would you be too concerned about a rotor tach, and then you don't really even need that. Anyway, I told one of the pilots, there was a wrecked H-34 out behind the hangar. I said, I'll go back there and see if there's a rotor tach on the engine. Went back and looked and came back and said, hey, yeah, there's a tach out there. He said, wrong number. I guess he looked with me and found the number was different than the one on his H-34. I said, hey, that's the serial number. That's not supposed to be. It's never the same. The model number here, and it's the same. Take my word for it. He said, no, I have to go to Bangkok and get rotor tach. Fly to Bangkok tomorrow. And I said, no, you don't have to, honest. I'll show you tomorrow morning. I'll get that thing off there myself and put it on for you. Bright and early the next morning, I'm down the flight line. Both helicopters are gone. Asked somebody there, hey, where are the helicopters? Oh, they go to Bangkok. So these guys weren't very eager to do anything but go to Bangkok. I was in the operations area, and I had to make a call to 7/13. Down at Bangkok, and I asked around. I said, "Where's their phone?" And they said, "There is no phone here. We have no phone." What if I have to call Bangkok? Well, you can't. No phone there. So I said, "Wait a minute. When I came here, I met the squadron commander, captain or colonel or whatever he was, somebody. Colonel, I think. There was a phone on his desk, and they looked at me like I was from Mars. You know, I mean, the colonel's got a phone. What's that got to do with you? That's not going to do you any good." So I go over and I knock on the colonel's door, and he says, come on in. I say, can I use your phone? And he says, well, yeah. So I stand there in front of his desk, pick up the phone, get the operator, get through to Bangkok, do my business and all, and leave. No Thai officer, enlisted man, or anybody would ever go into the colonel's office and ask if they could use his phone. You just wouldn't do that. Well, an American doesn't know any better. He'd do that if he needed to call Bangkok. Now, that was another one of my experiences with the Thais. The Border Patrol Police up at Udorn, that's a different story. Those guys were really, really on the ball. I'd stack them up against anybody, anywhere. Yeah, I imagine there is skill needed to fly radio control. A friend of mine has a new Tandy Model 1200 computer, and he's got Flight Simulator by Microsoft or SoftLaw or whoever put that out. Anyway, it's a Cessna 182, and I went over and tried to fly it the other day, and yes, I did crash. Nice program, though. I will spread your cards around to people that I come in contact with, and maybe something will come of it for you out of your collecting interests. I'm going to probably, next time I write a letter, return your two pictures of the, or your three pictures here of the radio control aircraft. Maybe you would like to have them back or keep them on hand to send or give to somebody else. And I'd like to keep, if I might, the pictures of the Vietnam Memorial. I am writing a story about the Vietnam Memorial, and when I'll ever get it done, I don't know. It's going very slowly. I'd like to have the pictures to refer to while I'm doing that story. I've got a Thai story I was working on last night, called The Night the Sappers Hit Utapao. Sappers tried to blow up, and were slightly successful, tried to blow up the B-52s out on the B-52 ramp. As luck would have it, I was out on the ramp the night that the sappers hit, the exact time that the sappers hit. And I can write the story from that perspective. I didn't know what was going on. Nobody knew what was going on, really. There were a lot of flashing lights, sirens, and fire trucks going back and forth, and air police vehicles, and It wasn't until the next morning, or the next afternoon rather, in Honolulu, when I read in the newspaper what had happened. I was out on the flight line preparing to take off. We were en route to Hickam. That's why I happened to be there. The story, I thought, was a pretty good idea, and I've been quite interested in doing it and getting it done, but it's not turning out the way I had hoped. It's not going to be very exciting, really. So whether anything will ever come of it, I don't know. Well, that'll about do it here. Tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to quit talking, and I'm going to some... What, Phyllis?
I said, yay!
It's getting Betty by time here. My wife is encouraging me to quit talking. Okay. I'm going to, sometime next week probably, finish this off with a recording made of air traffic in the area of Thud Ridge to the west of Hanoi, involving an F-105 flight, a Detroit flight, and one of Detroit's aircraft. They think the pilot became hypoxic. He never made it home, and they never did quite figure out what happened to him, but apparently was shot down or otherwise crashed. At any rate, here's the tape.
Detroit, we got Make Thunder. Come on, this side. On the hold. Detroit, we got Make Thunder. Come on back around. Come on back around. All right, I got him. Okay, man. And fine heavy. I got Nate all around this place. Come on up here. Come on back. Let's go, Detroit. Come on. Woo-hoo! Look at the Nate. Come on, you little bastard. Let's fight. Okay, Detroit, there's a Nate going, turning south here. Telephone behind 11 o'clock, very good. Got it. Okay, it's an unfriendly. Hey, they're building a new airfield out here. Okay, Jack.
Give me a little bit of Detroit 3, please. Why, do you have a tally on me? Right here, long left turn down across the river.
I got nukes all around this place. Come on up here.
Come on back. Let's go, Detroit.
Hello. Woo-hoo! Look at the nukes. I got two of them coming in on me. Lord, I need a little bit of help. Just a little bit.
I got some there. Okay, what's your position, Detroit 1?
Right over the ridge. The southern end. Take it all on head on.
And how did it?
Yep, we got a little bit of hit.
Give me your direction and altitude.
Roger, I'm going 240, right on the deck. I'm getting hit several times, I think. I got cannonballs going all around me.
Come on, get up out of there, Detroit.
I can't. I got a whole bunch of them behind me.
Okay, Detroit, there's a mate going, turning south here. Got a bogey high at 11 o'clock, Barry.
Got it. Okay, it's an unfriendly.
End of recording.
I got cannonballs going all around me.
Come on, get up out of there, Detroit.
I can't. I got a whole bunch of...
Okay, Detroit, there's a mate going, turning south here.